Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of the call. If you would like to ask a question at that time, please press star then one. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I'd like to turn over the meeting to Amy Fricke. You may begin.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar. My name is Amy Fricke, and I am one of the organizers for today's call. We really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us today. Today's webcast is presented by the Illinois Department of Human Services, Division of Mental Health, and the Illinois Mental Health Collaborative. The title of today's webcast is Effective Utilization of a Certified Recovery Support Specialist Professionals. You will hear from a panel of speakers today, and our speakers are from DMH, Nanette Larson, the Director of Recovery and Support Services, and from the Collaborative, Bryce Goff, Director of Recovery and Resilience, and Trenda Hedges, Peer and Family Support Specialist. Before we begin the formal presentation, I would like to review with everyone a few helpful tools and housekeeping items for the online portion of the forum. If you happen to get disconnected from the audio portion, please call back into the same number you just dialed in, which is 1-888-677-0065, and the passcode is Illinois. I'll repeat that. It's 1-888-677-0065, and the passcode is Illinois. The visual portion of this presentation is web-based. Of course, you can choose the audio portion only, but if you would like to log in to see the webinar presentation and PowerPoint, the login information is located on the invite you received after you registered. If you are experiencing any problems with the particular link to join, you can also go to www.joinwebinar.com and enter the web ID, which is 925-727-890. I'll repeat that, 925-727-890. There will be a designated question and answer portion towards the end of today's presentation. We ask that attendees hold their questions until this designated question and answer period. The operator will then open the lines up for you at that time. And lastly, at the conclusion of the presentation today, we ask that you please complete the brief satisfaction survey that will appear when you close out of the online forum. It should take less than 5 minutes to complete the survey, and we value your feedback. Without further ado, we will now begin the formal presentation, and I would like to turn it over to our first speaker today, which is Mr. Bryce Goff. Thank you.
Thank you, Amy. Hello, my name is Bryce Goff. I'm the Director of Recovery and Resilience for the Illinois Mental Health Collaborative, and I'd like to welcome you to today's webinar, The Effective Utilization of Certified Recovery Support Specialist, or CRSS, Professionals, Part 1 of 4, Preparation and Planning. This is Part 1 of a 4-part training series. Again, today's topic will focus on preparation and planning, and future sessions, which will be upcoming throughout this fiscal year, will include complex relationships, professional training, and program sustainability. So we're really excited about this topic series and look forward to working with you on each of these. Now I'm going to introduce you to today's presenters. Our first presenter is Nanette Larson, Department of Human Services, Division of Mental Health, Director of Recovery Support Services. Welcome, Nanette.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Then myself again, Bryce Goff. And finally, we have Trenda Hedges, who is also with the Illinois Mental Health Collaborative, and she is a peer and family support specialist. Welcome, Trenda.
Thanks, Bryce. It's an honor to be part of such a valuable presentation.
Thank you. I'm going to talk about the objectives for today's learning session. Participants will learn about the value of hiring CRSS professionals. Participants will also learn about ensuring that CRSS professionals are part of the organization's vision, and also examples of job titles and responsibilities. Other objectives include how to advertise for hiring CRSS professionals, some examples of interview questions, and examples of potential reasonable accommodations. So some of you may be asking, what is the CRSS credential? The CRSS is a credential for professionals who are trained to use their unique mental health or combined mental health and substance use recovery experiences to help others recover and to improve the human service system. It is a credential that means a professional has the knowledge, the skills, and the experience that meet acceptable standards of the recovery support profession. And now I'm going to hand this over to Trinda for the next slide.
Thank you, Bryce. So what is the value of hiring CRSS professionals? Well, CRS professionals provide the following minimum qualifications to your team: 100 hours of mental health recovery education, 1 year of full-time or 2,000 hours supervised mental health recovery support work experience. They have successfully completed a CRSS exam, and they have a commitment to the CRSS code of ethics. In addition to the minimum qualifications, CRSS professionals have demonstrated their competence in four domains specific to the CRSS credential. They are mentoring, advocacy, recovery support, and professional responsibility. We will explore these four competencies and other qualifications in detail later in the presentation. Additional ways that hiring CRSS professionals is valuable to your agency: CRSS professionals will enhance your organization through, one, visionary service. Science has shown that having hope plays an integral role in an individual's recovery process. CRSS professionals personify the recovery vision, and they bring a greater sense of hope to both their colleagues and the persons they serve through direct recovery services. They also enhance your organization through increased reimbursement. This refers to Medicaid reimbursement and billing under Rule 132. CRSS professionals may bill at the mental health professional level for any Rule 132 service, such as community support, psychosocial rehabilitation, outreach and engagement, and other services. We will go into this aspect in detail in the fourth part of this training series when we discuss program sustainability. The third way CRSS professionals enhance your organization is through exceptional engagement skills. Through their lived experiences, CRSS professionals have the ability to empower, encourage, and support a person going through recovery. For example, working on the warm line, I frequently hear a sigh of relief when a caller learns that I have been through similar experiences. This facilitates deeper understanding and broader engagement. It is common to hear phrases such as, "Oh, so you've been there and done that," or, "It's so comforting to know that I'm not the only one who has ever experienced this." Peer support has been on the cutting edge in health care in general. For example, the Mayo Clinic offers a peer mentoring program for persons experiencing breast cancer called the Pink Ribbon Mentor. We are seeing more and more of this type of peer support in all forms of recovery. This has been studied and researched and proven to be effective. Peers have an exceptional ability to engage other peers. For those interested in reading some research on peer support, you can go to the CRSS portion of the Collaborative's website and view on the link on several different links regarding research. And finally, CRSS professionals will enhance your organization through enriching inclusion. When you create a workplace that supports the value of persons with disabilities, it improves morale. When you have people at the leadership table who experience the system from a different perspective, they are able to bring an innovation, a uniqueness, and originality to the agency as a whole. Nanette, how does a CRSS professional help to fulfill the vision of mental health recovery?
Thank you, Trinda. Well, as we know, as long as there have been mental illnesses, there has been recovery. But as our brochure for the CRSS credential says, today is a brand new day in the mental health system. The Department of Human Services Division of Mental Health vision statement declares that the expectation is recovery. All persons with mental illnesses can recover and participate fully in a life in the community. We know from science that having hope plays an integral role in an individual's recovery. One of the things that I said recently in a conversation with other national experts regarding this whole issue of credentialing persons in recovery and moving forward with recovery support is I've never minded being on the cutting edge. And Illinois has been on the cutting edge. As a matter of fact, Illinois was the first state to have a competency-based credential for persons in recovery. There are many other states who have followed after us. We're not the first state to credential persons in recovery, but prior to our process, all of those states were utilizing a curriculum-based credential, and we were the first state to use a competency-based credential. The CRSS credential is one way for you, providers on the line, to begin to look at your own center's vision and mission. You can begin to ask some strategic planning questions, such as, how can CRSS professionals help you to better fulfill your vision? Where would CRSS professionals fit best within your organization's structure? So let's talk about that organizational piece just a little bit now. How will CRSS professionals formally link to executive management to aid in the transformation of the organization toward a recovery-focused entity? This is a question that needs some real serious consideration when organizations are beginning to think through the hiring of persons in recovery or CRSS professionals. The work that these persons provide goes beyond the peer support work that is considered direct service and really can and should help to work toward organizational change. Where will the CRSS professionals be assigned? One of the questions to ask is, what is an area in which they will be most likely to be welcomed into the organization's culture? So for the benefit of the person or persons being hired, we want to ask questions that will certainly ensure a smooth arrival for them. We want to think about their own wellness and their own recovery and their own process while also thinking about the overall organizational benefit. So these are challenging questions because it requires us to think strategically about how to keep the insights of this unique staff person or persons from being limited or lost in the bigger picture. For example, in hiring a person into a role, a recovery support specialist role, many have used various titles. I'll use that generic title in my conversation today. But in hiring a person into one of those roles, if only putting them into a direct service role where they are providing a wonderful peer support service for the persons that your organization serves, they're providing a tremendous benefit to the persons that your organization serves, but you may be losing out on some other great benefits for your organization. And so the key is thinking through it and planning for it. How will they be linked to the bigger picture, and how will their feedback be able to be provided to the higher level of the organization? So there are some examples I could provide. One way that you might be able to have ensure that the insights that are gained from these individuals are going to a higher level in the organization is by having them facilitating a regular consumer advisory council meetings and providing a written summary that goes directly to the executive leadership of the organization. We don't want to have a consumer advisory council meeting just for the sake of a consumer advisory council meeting without the input going to the top level over the organization. That would be tokenism. Mm-hmm. But the point being to provide that level of input and feedback and that council meeting being facilitated by a person who is a peer to those individuals and they feel more comfortable speaking openly about their feedback. Another example is by having this person who is supervised by a mid-level manager who reports to the executive leadership of the organization and thereby ensuring that that mid-level manager is providing that feedback to the executive leadership of the organization. So essentially, keeping in mind that it's important to have a strategy and have a plan. Some other organizational considerations when hiring persons into these positions. If there are multiple CRSS positions, should they be placed together or spaced out over the organization's structure? An organizational thought process in this regard would likely think, well, we're going to get our maximum benefit if we have one in this program and one in this program. And that is probably true. However, due to the unique nature of these roles, the individuals really don't have any true peers on the job. Their peers are their colleagues with whom they work, but their colleagues really are not able to relate to the experience they're going through as self-disclosed persons in recovery working in the mental health field. Many of their colleagues may be persons in recovery, but not self-disclosed in the mental health field, and therefore they're not true peers because they're not experiencing the same challenges of being a self-disclosed person in recovery working in the mental health field. And so if we're hiring more than one, having them working together or having some intentional way for them to connect with each other is an important organizational consideration. Which supervisors or programs are best prepared to effectively utilize the competencies of these new CRSS professionals? From my perspective, I would think that this is probably where the final decision gets made. A lot of great organizational strategic thinking can go into this, but ultimately the decision lands with who's going to be the best person to work directly with these individuals to ensure that their insights and their skills and their competencies are maximized within the organizational culture. And that's a challenging situation because you're actually putting a supervisor in a new role as well. A role they've not experienced. And we will be talking in our next session. This is part one of four. In part two of four, we will be talking about complex relationships, one of which is the supervisory relationship. And I think that that's a very important and key aspect of this conversation. So when you're considering where to place these individuals, identifying the program and the supervisor where they're most likely to be embraced so that they have a positive, welcome, warm experience when they come into the job, into the workplace, and where the supervisor is most likely to be able to really work strategically and effectively with these new employees. And then lastly, organizational considerations regarding advancement and career path. Consider what career paths may be available for these individuals. Consider opportunities for advancement and ensure that the career path is at least comparable to other entry-level staff. Quite honestly, I would think that any supervisory personnel or administrative personnel on the phone listening to this webinar today would read these bullet points and without pause simply say, yes, we agree. But the truth of the matter is that many CRSS positions have been created without a plan for advancement. And so this is something that definitely needs to be intentionally thought through and a plan made for it if it is going to happen, so that the individuals don't find themselves saying, I'm stuck. I got this job, and this is all I can ever do in this company, and I'll never be able to move upward in this organization. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Bryce to talk a little bit about recovery support job titles.
Thank you so much, Nanette. Great insights. There are certain principles that go along with designing a job title. And the first of those, of course, is quite basic, but something we should all think about is that the title should communicate the role of the position. And then different job functions should have different job titles. And finally, if we have a clear idea of what the employee will be doing, then we will know what to call them. I think that's a really important point, so I'm going to reemphasize it. If we start out with a clear idea of what the employee will be doing, then we will know what to call them. So let's look at some examples of job titles that are mismatched with duties. In other words, these are titles that do not match the duties that are corresponding. The first title is engagement specialist. So if you had a title of engagement specialist, but the duties were provides administrative support, including data entry and filing, you can see that they're probably not going to be doing a lot of engaging with anyone except a file cabinet. So the title doesn't effectively match the duties. The next title example is Recovery Support Specialist. This is one of my favorite titles because it's so descriptive. But you can see the duties that are listed here. Waters plants and assists with scheduling appointments isn't really related to the task of providing recovery support. Now, this example might seem a little off, a little bit goofy, but the fact of the matter is, in practice, we've seen examples where the title does not match the role. So we bring that up for emphasis. And the last title here is Consumer Advocate. The duties we have here that are mismatched are ensures consumer compliance with treatment plans and medications. So ensuring compliance is not the same as being an advocate. Okay, now let's talk about examples of titles that are appropriately matched with duties. So we're going to use those same three titles again. The first one is Engagement Specialist. So you expect this to have something to do with engaging folks. So let's look at the duties listed. Provides recovery support for individuals who are not willing to engage with traditional mental health services. Links individuals to natural support resources and mental health services as appropriate. Now that really seems to fit the idea of engagement. Let's look at the next title. Recovery Support Specialist utilizes self-disclosed recovery experience to assist others in learning about recovery and developing tools for wellness. Now that really seems to fit the title of Recovery Support Specialist. And finally, Consumer Advocate. Facilitates better communication between individuals and the organization to improve consumer satisfaction and organizational responsiveness. Now that really seems to match the idea of advocacy when we're talking about communication within the role. So what are some different examples of recovery support job titles? Now we're not advocating for you to use any of these particular titles. These are just some examples of titles we've seen. And some of these, personally, I really like, and I feel like they fit the role. And others, you know, seem more outdated or like they don't really effectively describe things. So looking at these, one example we've already mentioned, this is Nanette's title, Director of Recovery Support Services. Great title, descriptive. Then we have other titles, peer mentor, peer advocate, consumer advocate, recovery advocate, engagement specialist, recovery specialist, and on and on. Now, I thought I might open it up here to Nanette and Trenda a little bit to look at these. Are there any here that stand out to you as being really positive or ones that you're not so sure about? Trenda, you want to go first?
Sure. Actually, you know, one really comes to mind for me, which I feel, you know, may be a little on the cusp of being outdated or not appropriate. The job title, recovery manager, it implies the notion that a person is incapable of managing his or her own recovery. This implication resonates that a person in recovery needs a manager to tell them what, when, and how to recover, which really diminishes the key concept of personal responsibility. Nanette, do any of these stand out to you?
Yeah, thank you, Trenda. You know, interestingly, I've been the strongest advocate toward, you know, including the use of the term recovery in the job titles and avoiding the use of the term consumer in the job titles. And there are a couple things here that just jumped out at me today, even after we had this discussion recently in our planning process. The one that jumps out at me today actually is recovery specialist. You know, interestingly, when we started talking about the CRSS, Certified Recovery Support Specialist, We got there because we had some backlash, if you will, from the recovery community saying the only recovery specialist is the person themselves. And so the professional is the person who specializes in supporting the person's recovery, not specializes in recovery. And so that's where we settled on having our credential be the CRSS, not the CRS. Mm. And of course, you know, those little language things that, you know, people think are random, they're not at all random. There's quite a bit of discussion and backdrop that goes into that. So I guess that one jumped out at me today somewhat ironically because, like I said, I usually am the first person to advocate for ensuring that the term recovery goes into the title. And my recent insight has been regarding the use of the term peer. And somewhat like consumer, where every person in our country is a consumer of something, it's always bothered me that we use the term consumer to be synonymous with basically a person with a mental illness in our field. And it's really kind of strange, and it's strange to the consumers as well, and it's certainly strange to people outside of our field. And I feel like we're starting to get there with peer. You know, that peer is a fairly generic concept that every person in any situation in the world has a peer who's also in that situation somewhere that they can relate to. And yet we're starting to get to where we're talking about peers and using that synonymous with a person with a mental illness. And so I think I've just kind of cautioned those terms in terms of more along the lines of just be sure we're thinking this through. It's kind of what we've been saying throughout this webinar is it takes some thought process and some intentionality in doing it, and even engaging with the person themselves when you get them hired. You may hire them for a position that you've posted in the newspaper that has a certain title, and, you know, maybe your first conversation is, what do you think about this title? You know, because they could help you. That's actually my experience. I changed my own job title within the first week. So you know, that may be part of the process as well. So thanks for asking for our input, Bryce.
Sure. You know, I would just say as well that make sure that the title is a professional designation rather than a personal designation.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again, looking at, let's say, something like consumer advocate or consumer specialist, it can, although it's not intended, it can imply, you know, I'm a specialist in being a consumer. I don't get it. And so make sure that the role describes an activity rather than a personal designation. Thank you. So in terms of moving beyond the title to talk about the responsibilities of a recovery support specialist position, here are some other things to consider. So first, of course, we'd want to adequately define the job duties and design a comprehensive job description. Clearly list the position responsibilities and, very importantly, hire a qualified individual. So what are some examples of specific responsibilities that a recovery support specialist might have? One would be to conduct training for new and current employees. Another might be to review and participate in development, revision, amendment to agency policies and procedures. And then a third might be to lead or co-lead peer support groups. Now, I think a lot of places that are hiring recovery support specialists and people with the CRSS credential immediately go to the third bullet here on leading and co-leading peer support groups. And I just want to help us to expand our thinking a little bit beyond providing direct services, which is very valuable and which is what, you know, a big part of what we want people doing. But let's expand our thinking a little bit and say, okay, how can we best utilize this person and their unique skills and talents? And how can we use the opportunity of having this position to not just make a difference in the individual interactions with persons served, but to make a difference in the organizational culture? And so utilizing recovery support specialists to conduct training for other staff, for new and current employees, and also to help look at agency policies and procedures can be a very effective use. So what are some other examples of responsibilities? Facilitating Wellness Recovery Action Plan, or RAP classes, is a great use of a recovery support specialist. Conducting consumer satisfaction surveys can also be a great use. And, of course, advocating for consumers and family members. It's very important to carefully craft the job description. And I know that for most people on this call, that goes without saying. But with a newer area of employment, it's time to look at, okay, what are some of the unique ways that we're going to use this position within the organization? So with that, I'm going to refer back to Trinda to talk with us about recovery support position qualification. Thank you, Trinda.
Thanks, Bryce. So what qualifications should an employer expect a CRSS professional to bring to the table? Qualifications must go beyond having personal recovery experience. Merely, quote, hiring consumers, unquote, is known as tokenism and is inappropriate and ineffective. Qualifications are based on a combination of education, work experience, lived experience, and competencies or specific skill sets. So for more detailed information on qualifications, someone can go to the IADAPTCA website and explore the qualifications a person needs to obtain a CRSS credential. All credentials are based on a combination of education, experience, and competencies. But the CRSS credential is unique in that it also validates lived experience as a qualification. So other things to consider when shaping the position's qualifications pertain to the four domains of the CRSS credential, which are advocacy, professional responsibility, mentoring, and recovery support. So for advocacy, look at the fact that a CRSS professional has lived experience, which has enabled them to learn how to advocate in order to navigate the mental health system. Regarding professional responsibility, this qualification can also be related to personal responsibility, which is one of the key concepts to recovery. Part of being a good professional is speaking up about needing help in order to do what needs to be done successfully at work. Pertaining to the mentoring domain, the epitome of a good mentor is someone who has been there, done that, and can encourage others to do the same. And then for recovery support, the qualifications involve the ability to engage persons to actively participate in their own recovery process. Employers would want to consider how a CRSS professional can help to support and reinforce person-centered treatment. Now, let's look at each of these competencies in more detail. Under the domain of advocacy, some of the qualifications, and I emphasize some, are promoting individual choice and self-determination, advocating within the human service system, and also helping others to learn self-advocacy. So a practical example of this, many times on the warm line, we get calls from people who are bothered by the side effects of their medications. Helping them to learn how to effectively communicate this with their doctors is just one way in which we work towards developing self-advocacy.